Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to the elders past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a dissection of social and cultural issues relevant to gay men.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
Follow us on Instagram or Twitter, or join our community on Facebook by searching The Gays Are Revolting.
And support the show and access our after shows and live streams at patreon.com/gaysarerevoltingpod.
Hello, boys. Another week in isolation. How are we doing?
What do you mean?
Oh, you're the one that's been going around screaming.
It's you!
I do wonder when they, like, and look, you know, I'm not for the policing or whatever, but I do wonder when they catch these people that are like going across the city for a butter chicken or, or what was the last excuse? Oh, the guy that drove 45 minutes to get a packet of cigarettes from a particular shop that sells them cheap.
Oh, yeah.
I do wonder how they're unaware of everything that's happening right now.
I know. Literally, like, all the clients at work are ringing up being like, I live in such and such place, an hour away. Is it okay if I still come? I'm just like, no it's
also,
not.
For what? Who needs a fucking haircut? You're not showing yourself to anyone.
Put a hat on. You'll be right.
I do think there is cognitive dissonance, though.
Yeah.
In terms of the messaging that we have. Like, I was talking to someone about this at work today, being like, it's so confusing to have this messaging coming saying there's four reasons to leave the house, girly, which is you got to work, you got to study, you got to take care of someone. You know, you have these four reasons. Mm. But at the same time, the businesses outside of those four reasons are all still operating.
Yeah, it's so weird to see retail shops open. Like, it just doesn't seem like they should be open. Like, why are people like shopping for pots? Like, it's weird.
Yeah, well, they're not one of the four reasons. So therefore, they should be closed because we're not meant to leave. So it creates this dissonance, I feel, when you're walking around and you're like, if this thing's open, then surely it means I'm allowed to partake in that service.
Yeah, I agree.
But if you're listening to the direct messaging, which is what I believe we should be doing, you shouldn't be going to partake in those services if they aren't one of the four reasons. But anyway, it's a weird world.
This has turned into Granny Bingo Wireless.
I have... Glenn and I had our first fight.
Oh, exciting. What did you do wrong?
I know, right?
So you like killed him in his sleep.
This is my top tip to any listeners is if you're in a new relationship, don't play this game that what I invented, because I invented this game called The Thing I Like About You Least Is.
That's not a good one.
Generally, most people don't need that tip, to be honest.
I need it because I'm not good with cues. Or like hints. And so we played that. It's sort of round robin. You go back and forth. We could do it in this group.
Glenn, if you're listening to this and you need help, blink twice. Did you blink? Did you blink?
Well, we have a jam-packed episode. We've got a few things to talk about. To talk to us about how people living with a disability experience discrimination in the queer community, we'll be joined by Erin Kyan, who's a trans poet, writer, and podcast producer.
And in our after show, we've got another amazing interview with queer sex worker Dylan O'Hare, chatting to us about the fight to decriminalise sex work in Victoria and how the pandemic has affected the local industry.
Before all of that, we do have a little bit of an announcement to make.
We're pregnant.
I'm 8 months and I don't know who the dad is.
I'm with child.
No, we have decided that as a show, we are going on an indefinite hiatus.
Bum, bum,
we will be finishing up in a few episodes, not forever. Mm-hmm. We are going to be taking a break, an extended
permanently.
Break. Permanently.
Indefinitely. Long break till we die.
Yeah. No, it's a hard thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, we've covered so much and we've interviewed so many amazing people. Mm. And we've told so many of our own stories, and it has been fantastic. And the feedback and response we've had from people has just been amazing. But I we've talked about this off air. I feel like we're sort of all in agreement that, you know, it's time for other people to be now telling those stories and investigating those things. And one thing I'm really proud of is that when we started this podcast, there wasn't really any Australian, you know, regular gay podcasts that were happening. And now there's so many amazing ones on Lip Media, mm-hmm. but also others that aren't on Lip Media as well. And there's so many amazing voices
out
there.
That aspire to be on Lip Media.
Yeah.
Like, it's good to have goals.
But there's so many amazing voices out there it's great. You know, I think that's an amazing thing that people now can jump on and hear people from their community talking.
Yeah.
So as sad as we are to be ending it, I think best for us to, you know, go out while we're loving it and enjoying it.
I just kind of wish you guys could have told me this before we started recording.
Should have come to the production meeting.
It fully feels like I'm getting broken up with on air.
It's you, it's not us.
I'm joking. I knew about it too. It feels like a good time.
How long's it been? Like 2 years?
2 years, yeah.
Well, the thing that I like about it is that we're going to end on our 101st episode, which means if there was an episode that you hated, you can just pretend that one didn't happen.
And it's going out.
It was just 100.
Can we, like, dress up as Dalmatians for our last...
It's going to be puppy thing.
Our last episode.
We'll also be doing one last live stream on Thursday, the 20th of August at 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. So after we record that puppy-themed 101st episode for our patrons, who have really supported and helped us get here and do our live concerts and everything, what we love, we'll be doing another live stream where you can chat to us, because people always say real dirty stuff to us in those live streams.
I love it.
And a little side comment. Yeah, thank God we're sitting down, because I'd be cracking a boner every time we get on those.
Good Lord.
Like, I honestly, like, when we started, I was just like, oh, yeah, this is like a cool, fun thing. Maybe like 100 people will listen to this.
Totally.
And like the
I think someone asked us about it at the Sydney live show.
Yeah.
100% no, I did not. When Dan, the producer, was putting this together, I thought, because, you know, so many people start podcasts and there's so much work that goes into it. I thought, oh yeah, that'll be good for a couple of weeks just to do something and I can test out some jokes or whatever. And no, I did not think that it would have the traction that it has had, and that it would resonate with people as strongly as it has. And I'm so proud that it has, you know, that some of the messages we've been getting from people, especially people that are like, well, in rural areas, but not necessarily just physically isolated areas, but also socially isolated areas. I mean, I know when I was like 17, 18 and still in high school, I was just searching everywhere for information and for connection to community, because I hadn't yet, you know, found the physical queer spaces. So I'm just so glad that they've been able to connect with the community.
Gosh, it seems so surreal. Like, I remember having that first drink with our producer to discuss the show, and I was like, this is so something I would never do.
Yeah.
Like, this is just so outside of the norm. I was just like, had so much internalized homophobia. I was like, oh God, I can't be so public in a way and like show people how gay I am.
I think you've changed the most over the course of the
show. I feel like I've changed a lot. Like, I get emotional thinking about the whole journey of it all, and I remember having that first chat with Dan, our amazing producer, and him saying how he really wanted the show to become like this big thing and to do live shows, and I was just like, yeah, live shows, let's get real, buddy. I was just like, you know what, I always say no to this kind of thing, like let's just say yes and just see what happens, like who knows what it could lead to. And I'm honestly so fucking happy I did, and meeting you boys and just building these relationships with you and the like amazing people we've met along the way, and like the messages we've received, it's it's honestly changed the course of my life and I think what I've grown into and who I've become. And I'm honestly so grateful and I love you guys. And I thank you so much.
Oh, love you too, Kyle. Glad to see you off the pipe.
You got me there.
We got you on there and we got you off it. I did want to say, you know, as sad as it is to wrap up, we're calling it an indefinite hiatus because I think all four of us and plus our producer is definitely open to the opportunity of us getting our ends wet together again at some
making
point.
A movie.
Yeah, like we can do some special one-offs and stuff. So please don't unsubscribe to the podcast.
No,
stay subscribed so that if we do some specials in the future, you'll get your little...
If some like outstanding gay event happened, like Elton John stabbed Lady Gaga or something, we would like...
We're jumping on it.
Episode in the comment on it.
Yeah. Do you know what the other journey I love that's happened with this podcast, and maybe this is why it has to end, is that when we started this podcast... None of us were in a relationship, and now
oh my god! And literally, Luke just got in the Nickelback of time.
Yeah, that's so it has to end. That's
I would say though, it's been. I am really grateful to Brassy Little Bumblebee, our producer.
Amazing producer!
We would absolutely not be here without him,
especially for giving a platform specifically to people of color. Within our community, and something I'll always take away from that is being able to realize how important that is to me and being able to contribute as a voice amongst the queer colored community has been an amazing, amazing opportunity that I'd never in 100 years expected. And you know, I thought we'd done about 2 weeks worth of episodes, so this is all coming as a real big shock to me that it's been 2 years. Like I'm really excited to see not only what other projects come out of the four of us and what we do with the platform that we've created and the reach that we have within our community. It's an opportunity for us to make new things for you guys to watch and listen and get your life to, as well as to hear from some voices that aren't the four of us fighting each week.
Oh god, guys, I'm not sure what I'm gonna do. Like, it's just such like a regular thing to have to do this each week and talk to you boys. It's like therapy for me, honestly. Like,
I think we're just gonna have to keep catching up on Thursdays.
Yeah.
Can we do it in this recording room though? If we're gonna catch
up in the studio, we'll just continue doing the podcast, but we won't record it.
Yeah. We should be like a finishing episode where we just get like hammered and record.
I'm hammered every episode. I don't know.
Yeah, that is accurate.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. Thank you to all of our fans. Sorry if that comes as a bit of a shock to you guys, but we also want our last bunch of episodes to be of really high quality. We want to make sure we're giving you good content. So it's sort of that all ties in together where we want you to feel like we love you and we're giving it our all. And that we're like an absent father. We might come back someday. You know, we're like a really
cigarette.
We're like a neglectful parent. We might return.
Just like, I need some money. Hang on, I'm back.
Oh god.
So we have three more episodes after this one, which we are going to make absolutely amazing for you. So stick with us for the last three. Of course, jump into our Facebook group, The Gays Revolting, if there's anything that you'd really love for us to talk about that we haven't covered in the last 100 episodes. And we are going to keep that group going because there's been some really amazing conversations in there from people that are looking for connections or advice or just sharing information that sort of goes along with the grain of the podcast. So if you are a member of that Facebook group, The Gays Revolting Facebook group, stay in there, and if you're not, feel free to join it because there's a really lovely sense of community in there. And hey, jump in there and suggest some other podcasts that people can listen to as well.
Could you imagine being so organized that you left Facebook groups once you the whole time you were saying that, Tom, I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, good point.
But I'm tonight's a cool episode. We've got some cool episodes left, and No, I bleached my hair so bad that I think...
Oh, I forgot. Like, that happened right before I deleted my socials.
Oh, my God. I think...
Is your hair still orange?
I think it did some... Excuse me.
I mean...
Excuse me.
Ombre?
Excuse me. No, I
didn't say orange. I said ombre.
Call me KFC because it is fried, bitch. It is fried.
Do you know what KFC stands for? Kyle's favorite chicken.
Yeah. That picture you sent the other day, I was like, oh, that is rough.
Yeah.
It's never
Luke,
been
I need to come over for a care visit to care for your hair.
Oh, please, please, so. Can you? I think that's definitely a care.
You're doing that, if you could come over and fix my housemate's hair. So he decided he wanted to go like silver gray.
Yeah, yeah.
And because he's got really dark hair, he was like, oh, and it's really thick dark hair too. He's like, oh, can you bleach my hair and then we'll dye it gray? So he bought the bleach and then he bought the gray.
Yeah.
I did the bleach, but I don't think I did it long enough because it just sort of went orange. And then I was like, oh, it'll be okay. We'll put the gray dye in over the top and then that'll turn it gray.
Look like an old man.
So we put the gray. Oh no, we put the gray dye in, and it just hasn't done anything. Yeah. So I'm. But luckily, he can't see anyone else except me. So I just keep saying, "Oh yeah, it's a really gray kind of blonde, isn't it? It's a really
Wow, oh, so gray.
Yeah, so yeah, if you could come and fix that before the end of isolation, that would save me a lot of hassle.
Come and sort you out. That's funny.
You're like a gay Mary Poppins. But it was literally the same thing because Glenn was like, "I bleach." This is him saying this. He was like, "Oh, I bleached my hair. It's so easy. I'll do yours." Like,
but
like,
you have such thick, dark hair.
And
you
I was like,
"Asian
dude,
hair." And he
I know. I
hair.
Was like, "Babe, you have the whitest dude white hair."
Yeah.
Like you were. It's like a couple of sticks on a thing. Like that ain't nothing compared to a Filipino head of hair, baby. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we did it anyway. It's fun if you enjoy the feeling of your head slightly burning and eroding away.
Slightly.
I also just wanted to say thank you very much to everyone that messaged me from last week's episode. It was pretty crazy getting a whole bunch of stuff on Instagram, and I think it ties into ending the show, but realizing how many people really do sort of pay attention to our lives and what's happening and how it made last week a really sort of beautiful time, and being able to tiptoe back into reality and interacting with people, and people that shared with me stories of their own personal grief and things that they've dealt with this year. It's been I really appreciate it. So thank you to those people too. It was very kind of you, except for a couple of you that made comments about my hair as well.
You're on the naughty list.
Pick one or the other, babe. You can either be condolences or your hair looks wrecked.
You can't do both.
Yeah. You can't do both, babe.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, so we're really excited to speak to us about his creative work and discrimination against members of our community that are disabled. We're joined by Erin Kian, a trans artist, poet, zine maker, and podcast producer. Man, that is a quadruple threat from Melbourne. So thank you so much for joining us, Erin.
Thank you for having me. And yes, I love hats. I just love to collect different hats to wear, roles to be. It's my favorite thing to do.
We are such a multifaceted, you know, we love our triple, quadruple. What's after quadruple?
Quintuple?
Quintuple?
Quin something.
Quin threats, you know, that's what we're all about it. But
So disability is a term that encompasses sort of a wide range of like sensory, physical and cognitive and also psychological abilities. And in 2018, La Trobe University published a report about the difficulties faced by LGBTI people with disabilities. What sort of cultural ideas around disability exist in our community, and what way do we see discrimination sort of playing out?
It's a very good question. It's a very broad question.
Yes, it
is. There's no single answer to that.
Yeah.
How disability is viewed in the trans community is very different from how I found it to be viewed in like the cis gay community. Mm. So like even within our community, there's these different ideas and different pockets. I think it's fairly safe to say that the majority of the queer community views disability the same way the majority of the straight world views disability, which is that it's some kind of deficit in a person.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I have to be honest, I'm not 100% sure what non-disabled people think of us all that much, because I don't usually want their opinions.
Of course. No, totally. Yeah. It's like when people ask us what straight people think about us, I'm like, oh, yuck.
I would like you to not think about me. Yeah. I think discrimination is kind of the thing where it does come up though, right? Like that's where you're like, oh, I see. We're viewing this in really different ways. Mm. So I feel like a little bit of useful theory that might be helpful to think about is there's two kind of main models of thinking of disability. There's the medical model and the social model of disability. So the medical model of disability says that there's something wrong with your body, like there's something about your body that doesn't work right, and that's why you're disabled. The social model of disability says that it's not your body that's wrong, it's that society isn't supporting you to be taking part in it. So I know that might be a little bit weird to think of, because we do tend to think of disability as primarily a physical or mental condition. And the idea behind the social model is that, so for example, I'm going to use myself as an example, right? I use a wheelchair to get around outside. Me using a wheelchair isn't the problem. The problem is that places aren't wheelchair accessible.
For sure,
that's what the social model of disability refers to. Some people are very heavily medical model. Some people are very heavily social model. Some people are in between. Unsurprisingly, disabled people are not a monolith. So, you know, we can't all agree on the one thing, just like any community. But I think those ways of thinking about it are the main ways people think about disability within the disabled community. Mm. And I imagine that for abled people, everyone is pretty much all focused on that medical model. Everyone's like, you're disabled because there's something wrong with you. Something's broken.
Yeah.
And that can be true for some people. I know a lot of people with chronic illness definitely think of themselves that way. But even if we do view it as, okay, there's something wrong with my body, there's a really big gap between, okay, something is not working quite right and I'm broken.
Yeah.
Like these are actually two really different concepts that are usually conflated.
Mm. And that's so interesting to hear that as well, in terms of when you tie that into how people view sexuality as well as being this binary kind of thing that's normal and this other way which is wrong or different, you know.
It's familiar, right?
Yeah.
It's really similar to how queerness is treated. Like,
yes.
Oh, you're not straight, therefore you're broken. Well, it's like, no, I'm just not straight.
Exactly.
You know? And a lot of people with disabilities, myself included, like, that's kind of where we are on that. It's like, I'm not broken, I'm just different.
But
I always think for abled people, a safer starting point is to assume that we're not broken.
Because
that's certainly the more humanizing starting point, I think.
Yeah. That's rather a top tip for the evening, guys. Let's start at that level. But it's so true. Like within the realms of sexuality and gender identity, all the voices that we've shared on this show have really supported the idea that none of us are a monolith in our community. Mm. And I think that's why it's so great to have you on the show and have different guests each week now, is we get to share different slices of what lived experiences are and reiterate that there isn't this one-size-fits-all solution to all these issues. But what's interesting is you did mention, you know, wheelchair access for one, and how much of the social queer community has been built around our nightlife, our clubs, our drag shows, our venues. I wanted to talk a little bit more about this kind of focus on the accessibility to differently abled members of our community. Mm. Like, obviously it has to be more than just putting in a ramp at a venue. Like, it must be a bigger issue than...
Although, can I just say, that would be a great place to start.
Yeah.
Because most places fail that first step.
Yeah.
Tip number two from Aaron tonight, let's start with the ramp.
It would be, I mean, every time I go somewhere now, because I haven't always used a wheelchair. I've been disabled since I was a child, but I only started using a wheelchair in the last few years because I have a progressive condition. Mm-hmm. Like, my ability to go places... First, it took a massive skydive because I couldn't go out at all. And then I got the wheelchair and I was like, cool, I can go out again. Oh, actually, I can't actually go to like a good 60% of places I used to be able to go. It's really frustrating because not only are places not accessible, but they won't even tell you that. You'll have to call them and be like, hey, are you wheelchair accessible? And then the person on the other end doesn't know because it's usually, you know, the bartender or something. And they're just like,
yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, like maybe you could. You could maybe possibly sort it out.
Yeah.
Maybe is a big one. Or my personal favorite is when, and this is especially common in pubs, the venue is wheelchair accessible, like or quote unquote wheelchair accessible, in that it's theoretically possible to get a wheelchair in. Yes. But then there's no accessible toilet. So go to the pub, but don't have a drink.
Yeah, no. You won't be able to go to the bathroom. None of that.
Yeah.
You're playing with fire there. You're playing with fire. But yeah, it's that kind of like, it depends. We're accessible to an extent or something of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, and again, that's even if you can get in the door at all. I mean, I don't know of any wheelchair accessible sex on premises venue in Melbourne, in Australia, really. So that's been something that like wheelchair using like queer men have been kept out of forever. Yeah, it's really uncomfortable to have to be the person to call places and be like, hey, can I come in? And then they have to go, no. And the worst part is that you just kind of have to go, okay, thanks, and hang up instead of being like, well, why not?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Why don't you want my money? But yeah, there are a lot of things that affect accessibility. Like really common, if we're talking about nightlife, flashing lights, like strobing lights are like in every nightclub.
Yeah.
And those things can trigger seizures and migraines and just be a real bad time.
For sure.
And there's not usually a warning when you go in either. Because this is the thing, a lot of stuff around accessibility, if we're warned about it, we can adjust our plans accordingly. It's not knowing that's the biggest problem. Like, even when I have to bloody call someone and be like, hey, can I get in the door? I would much rather go to their website and like have a little accessibility note on their contact us page or something that's like, unfortunately, we are not wheelchair accessible. Great, you just saved me a phone call. Like, that kind of stuff would be really helpful.
And it just makes so much sense. If you Google a venue, they have the analytics now to tell you their peak busy times just through like,
right?
The power of technology. But yeah, warnings about excessive strobe lighting, etc. Because some of the shows I've seen, y'all are crazy.
Yeah.
They're intense. And that should just be there as a general warning for anyone attending.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's true.
That we're going to flash the house down boots at you.
And it also works out really well because people who really like strobing effects, like I really love strobing and flashing lights. Yeah. I think it's cool as hell. But so like I see that and I'm like, hell yeah, I want to go to that. You know? You know, it's and I think that's kind of like when we talk about accessibility, I think a lot of people think of it as like this checklist, right? Like I'm gonna tick off, yes, we've got a wheelchair ramp, yes, we've got an accessible toilet, you know, yes, we've got warnings about any flashing lights, we've got captions for our movie night, we've got, you know, and that's all good. Don't get me wrong, I don't want to be down on that at all, but like accessibility is more than just this idea of a checklist. Like at a very basic level, accessibility is the pathway between a disabled person and the thing they are trying to access. So when you are presenting, you know, what we call accessibility accommodations, you are presenting something to get someone from being unable to access the thing to being able to access the thing. The reason I say that to think of it like with this framework is because if you wear glasses, you're disabled, right? But you don't think of yourself that way because glasses are so normal. The path has been smoothed for you to wear glasses in every part of your life. That's not the case in something like using a wheelchair or, you know, being deaf or something like that. So like accessibility, it's about creating a relationship between the thing and the disabled person trying to get at it. Mm-hmm. If something is inaccessible, it means that that relationship either doesn't exist or can't exist or is being forced not to exist. And that's where it starts becoming a problem, because whenever we talk about, you know, disabled people in the queer community, there's always this kind of like, how do we like let them in? And I'm like, why aren't you more concerned about what you're missing without it?
Yeah.
Like, why is it, oh, I guess we should, you know, I guess we should put in some bare minimum effort and like let the disabled people in. But it's like, we can really do a lot for the community if you let us. Like, I know so many queer disabled people and they get so much stuff done. It's interesting to me that it's always presented in this very strange power dynamic where it's assumed that disabled people are like on this lower tier of interaction with the community.
Yeah, I have seen some event listings and I'm not going to like shame anyone, but you read those event listings on Facebook and it almost seems like patronizing, like we're doing you a favor by granting you access to this event.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I would rather people be condescending and have the information out there than not have the information out there, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
You know, and I think the main way to combat against that is to stop thinking of us as separate. You know, we're not outside the community somehow. Like, we're here already. There are so many, so many queer disabled people. You know, if you're not seeing us, that's because of your own position in how you interact with the community. And like involving us as well, especially when it comes to events, one of the easiest ways to do it this is to involve disabled people in your planning committees.
In the planning, yes.
Have the disabled people on your team, hire disabled people. That will make it a lot more organic when you start looking at access needs, because there'll be someone there who's like, well, I could only come to this thing with this thing, so let's look at this other stuff.
So like, you've talked a little bit about it just then. But
yes,
like,
sorry, I go off on tangents a lot. I'm so sorry.
No, I love it. It's fantastic. It's very informative and it's great to listen to. But like, do you think there's some sort of degree of ableism that we need to acknowledge in our queer community? And like, what do we need to do to acknowledge it as a community of queer people?
So there's a few things, I think. So when it comes to events, like one of the things I'm a big fan of is using accessible venues even if you don't need it to be accessible.
Okay, yeah.
You know, if you're organizing an event for Midsummer, right? Like organizing it at an accessible venue, still having your accessibility information there. Like then even if no disabled people come, you're still giving your financial support via using the venue to an accessible venue. And I think thinking about business like that is actually a very underappreciated form of improving disabled inclusion. By making it more normal to have that stuff, you make it easier for disabled people to go. And then like in terms of like trying to be diplomatic,
I could totally tell from that little pause there. I was like, I know that little 2 second pause.
Yeah. Because unfortunately, like a lot of the problem is individual people.
Yeah.
Like, yes, we have this community-wide problem, but it's a community-wide problem because it occurs in individual people in the first place, if that makes sense, like aside from the structural stuff. Because the structural stuff is usually around things like accessibility.
Yeah.
And as I said, some general, like maybe mainstream ideas of disability that leaks in from, you know, the mainstream world. But like, here's a genuine question. Like, would you date someone disabled? Like if someone came up on Tinder who was disabled?
For me personally, I'm all about the person. Like I couldn't care less about your physical attributes whatsoever, if it is a physical attribute that we're talking about here.
I think a more realistic question would be to ask if someone would date me in any capacity. But I've previously dated people with sort of cognitive disabilities and have found that it's in any relationship you bring things to the table and
that's it.
You date a person rather than a set of sort of pros and cons. So to me, that has personally never been an issue. But if we're flipping the questions onto us, I definitely, something that resonates with me with what you said is when you're organizing an event, for example, to be asking those questions and to choose the right venues, because it normalizes the conversation. And then gays love to throw an event, you know.
Right?
If we end up in a fringe show, we got a Midsummer show, then we got something for, you know, COVID, you know, in the background. But we're doing shows consistently throughout the year. And if every time we're asking them those important questions about accessibility and bathrooms and the basic things, it becomes normalized when you're booking a venue. And then the venue starts to realize everyone's asking me these fucking questions because this is normal.
Yeah.
And we need
and
to
especially if you pass on a venue, if it's not wheelchair accessible, you say, sorry, we really need it to be accessible.
Yeah.
Enough people do that, it adds up. Because so often, especially around accessibility and events, venues love to go, oh, it's too expensive to make our venue accessible. It's a favorite. God, I wish I had a dollar for every time I'd heard it.
Yeah.
And it's again, it's ironic that it's never, what's the cost of not being accessible? You know, how much money are you leaving on the table? Because, like, hey, like, got news for you. Disabled people have money and we would like to go out and do things. yeah. And yeah, like, the reason I turned that question, it's not necessarily like I'm not picking on you guys specifically.
No.
Like, I'm
we
more
like it, Aaron. Yeah. I like it.
Give it to me.
Like, it's more of a, if I can ask you, the hosts, that hopefully the people listening think that too. Because, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people, like, I don't know, like, what if going to the gym is a massive integral part of your life, right? And like you're one of them muscle gays and you need to, like, date another muscle gay. You're probably not going to date someone chronically ill then. And the thing is, that's actually fine because you're not turning, you're not being like, oh, no, I couldn't because they're disabled. You're being, oh, no, I can't because they can't, they're not compatible with what I'm looking for in a partner. And I think this is where things get tricky, right? Because, like, you shouldn't have to try to date people you're not compatible with. That's
I learned that lesson the hard way.
Oh, haven't we all? But yeah, like, you know, but you also have to go, okay, but what am I assuming? Like, I know I've had I've had some very awkward online conversations, not recently, thankfully. COVID has killed dating. But, you know, because I'm really into, like, DS stuff, and so there's a lot of, like, oh, I want, you know, I want a guy who's gonna, like, make me ripped. And I'm like, I know how to do that. Like, I have all the information to make that happen. I'm just not going to be doing it with you.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because then there's suddenly that little ping of, like, oh, that's not what I want. And it's like, okay, I think you need to go away and think a bit harder about what you want then.
Yeah.
And I genuinely don't think that's an example of, like, disability discrimination. I think that's an example of people not thinking through what's actually important to them.
Mm-hmm.
Literally every disabled queer I know has at least one, usually 10 horror stories about, like, being turned down in often very rude ways. Ugh. Especially my friends who use wheelchairs. Like, I fortunately haven't had this, but, like, almost everyone I know has had an experience of setting up a date. You know, you meet on Tinder or something, and then the person comes in and literally just walks out again without even saying hello.
Oh, God.
And that I have a much harder time thinking is a compatibility issue, right? Like, that's just rude, you know?
Yeah.
People who acquire disabilities while they're in their 20s or 30s or whatever often suddenly experience losing a huge amount of social capital in the community. That's where you have to go, okay, something's up, because the person hasn't changed.
Yeah.
So if someone who already has, like, quite a lot of social capital and is quite popular and has never had trouble getting a date is suddenly struggling with all of that, and the only thing that's changed is that they're disabled now. I mean, unfortunately, I don't really have a cure for this, because, like, it's like any kind of discrimination, like, when it comes to dating, right? Like, you can't police people's individual interactions or preferences.
I try.
But they're... I try. Let me rephrase. I personally can't do that. I encourage you to.
Yes.
Because, yeah, like, it's not even necessarily people's fault, because we're fed these ideas about what makes someone attractive. We're fed these ideas about what makes someone a valuable partner. Like, it's really, really common. I mean, me and my partner get this all the time. Like, people will see someone, an abled person dating a disabled person, and be like, oh, you're so brave. Oh, you're aren't you good? Aren't you good for dating the cripple? Like, you know, and fortunately, I find that kind of funny these days, but I only find it funny because it's happened often enough that I've built up that sort of defense humor to it. You know, and also because, like, if, like, when it comes to me and my partner, he's the one that would be lost without me. So, you know, I don't think he'd mind if I said that.
It's interesting on that note, one of the things that was highlighted in the La Trobe University report was a lack of sexual freedom and expression of those members that are intersecting in the LGBTI community and the disability communities.
like, it's fascinating to talk about how someone who may experience that shift in their life later on and lose that amount of social capital. Do you think it's something that's sort of like a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy, and that the lack of access to the venues then creates a lack of access to the community that then leads to a lack
absolutely
of sexual expression that then doubles back around to not engaging in? Do you know, does that make sense? Is that
yeah it does. You're absolutely on the money. Like, I mean, as I said, I when I had to start using a wheelchair, I lost access to a lot of places that previously I had gone. You know, like, it's very hard to maintain much sort of social momentum if you're suddenly locked out of a lot of stuff that's really normal and common in the community.
Yeah.
It's especially important to make sure that we don't lose people, you know? Isolation is a massive problem for queer people in general. You don't want to compound that with them being disabled as well. Like, both, like, LGBTIQA plus people and disabled people both have extremely high rates of isolation and loneliness and a lack of, like, community and a lack of, just being with each other, you know? And you put those things together and it's not like you just get the same level of those. It compounds.
Yeah. So one thing I want to chat about is sort of negative body image, which tends to be quite a major issue in the queer community. But I'm guessing with people with physical disabilities, that can be quite an issue in some cases as well. So if you don't mind me asking, as someone with a physical disability, how has your relationship with your body sort of changed over time?
Yeah. So, I mean, in my particular, I'm not a great test case for this. partially because I became disabled while I was a kid. So my like, I don't have like an abled adult body experience. My body's just my body. So I live at this very interesting intersection of being disabled, transgender, and fat. And these things mean that to most of the world, I am basically the most abominable thing that can exist.
Oh my God.
And it's worth noting that I don't think of myself that way, and I actually never have. I'm not going to pretend I've never struggled with body image, because that, oh, come on, that would be a huge lie.
Yeah.
But, like, I've found it a lot easier because I am this sort of trinity of, like, abominableness, that I stopped caring about what was, like, generally considered attractive a
the
really long time ago.
Attractiveness.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I don't care. Like, you know, I care what I think is attractive. I care about, like, how I perceive myself.
For sure.
And, you know, especially, like, my personal tastes are not very mainstream. So, like, I don't suffer from that kind of, like, oh, I'm ugly by my own standards. It's like, no, I'm fucking hot by my own standards, actually. Like,
yes.
So, like, I'm not the best test case for that, but, like, definitely I see it all the time. You know, people struggle with, like, oh, no one's going to want to date me because of this. No one's going to date me because of this. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I know this sounds like a really small thing, but one of the major reasons I think we end up in those sort of loops and that self-hating hole is because we don't see disabled people being celebrated as attractive.
Yeah.
There's no, like, centerfold of, like, disabled people. There's no, you know, there is porn of it, but it's usually extremely dehumanizing, right? Like, it's not it's not
fetishized.
Celebratory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, God, do you know how excited I was when, like, a wheelchair using man won Mr. Leather International? I was
amazing.
So excited. Like, because that's like, that was such a huge thing. That was like, look, it literally the ideal leather man in the world. And he uses a wheelchair. And that was huge. Hmm. And I saw that ripple across, like, the global queer disabled community. Everyone was like, oh my God, like, look, like, he's so hot. Everyone thinks he's hot. And it's like, you can be hot and disabled, you know, because we just don't see it. It's just not presented as an option. It's not presented as an option to disabled people to see ourselves as, and it's not presented as an option to abled people to let them go, oh, maybe I can be attracted to a disabled person, you know? Like, so it's really easy to end up in this, like, hole of self-loathing or you know, poor self-image, because who's telling you otherwise? You know, how are you supposed to climb out of that hole if no one's helped giving you a hand up?
That's it.
Absolutely. Speaking of, like, that visibility of disabled bodies and some of the stories that we're starting to see get more traction in 2020 in terms of the media that we consume have had elements of intersectionality with queerness and differently abled people, like Special, which was on Netflix, which we talked about on this show.
Yeah.
How do you personally feel about some of these new narratives that are getting told through our media? Does it feel like Mr. Leatherman sort of moments where you're like, yes? Does it feel like
yes,
accurate
absolutely.
Representations? Like
Special was really good. I love Special. And I think it's really important to note one of the reasons why Special is so good is because it was written by a disabled man.
Yes.
And I don't mean that in a like, oh, abled people can't write about us way. Like, I don't mean it like that. I mean that someone who lives this and loves it wrote it. Yeah. That experience and that love comes through. You know, and it doesn't dehumanize and it doesn't fetishize because it's coming from the right place. You know, I absolutely think that abled people could write about disabled people by like in this same way. I absolutely do. I just think that it's harder because they don't have that same exposure.
Yeah.
I would like more.
Yes.
I love more. Special, but like it's one show.
Yeah.
Most people haven't watched it, even though they should. It's real good.
It's a phenomenal show. Yeah.
But I do feel like this year is definitely moving towards sharing more, and I hate to use the word non-traditional stories, but just newer stories that haven't been told within our community. Mm. You know, I bang on about it in this show so many times, being like, I don't want to watch another story about a pretty white affluent gay man.
Oh my god, right?
Getting, coming out of the closet and being loved by his family and then falling in love. You know, like I don't want to hear that story anymore.
It's like we've seen that. It's done. We're over it.
We've seen that. It's done. And I want these new stories like Special about different experiences within our community. And I feel the floodgates are kind of opening up on that.
Especially
with streaming platforms.
I think it's starting. I also, like, I'm not going to lie, I'm not happy with where it is.
Yeah.
And I think one of the major reasons I'm not is because it's always, you're allowed one thing, right?
One,
like,
yeah.
Special was about, like, a cis white gay man.
Yes.
Right? Who was disabled. It was great. I loved it. But also, call me when that can be about, like, a brown lesbian trans
Absolutely.
Woman, disabled person, you know, like
that's
like,
a show I would watch.
Right? Please.
Hold it. That's it. All right, let's pivot over and talk about your artistic endeavors. Mm. You do podcasting and you started back in 2017 with Love and Luck podcast.
Yes.
It's a fiction love story told via voicemails, which I love the premise of that. Like, that sounds amazing. So can you sort of tell our listeners a little bit about the show and like what was sort of behind your decision to take the story in such a positive direction? Because
you've
emphasized it's very warm and happy.
Yes, we have a massive thing on our thing is always no one gets killed and everyone lives happily ever after.
Yeah, no one dies.
Is the promise.
It's a queer story without death.
I mean, that was actually a driving force when I was writing it. So yeah, Love and Luck is a queer love story set here in Melbourne. We use a lot of real Melbourne places and events. Yeah, it's about two guys who meet and they fall in love and then they find out they have magic powers through the power of love. And yeah, use that power to support the queer community.
Love it.
And yeah, I wrote it because I was going through a rough time and I just needed something to focus on. And I wrote it as this power fantasy. I wrote it as like, what if queers had magic powers and we could like be happy and like we could have nice things and we could have friends and family and everything. Like, I'm not going to pretend that like some darker stuff doesn't happen in the show. It does, but the promise is always everyone will be okay. You know, everyone will be okay. We'll get through this because that's really important. Because like, queer media is so full of dead gays. Like, it's this leftover from the Hays Code that then just sort of permeated everything. And it permeated everything to such a degree. I think even like queers, we do it too, partially because we've grown up on it, right? Like you just learn that gays die.
Yeah. It just feels familiar to tell a story that way after a while.
And of course, the other unfortunate side of it is that most of us have been victims of hate and violence, and there's nothing wrong with writing about your own experiences. By the way, I made a character in Love and Luck have PTSD because I have PTSD. That was a mistake because I wrote it and I was like, oh, this is so good for representation. I'm great. Forgetting that I then had had to direct it and rehearse it and listen to it over and over and over again while I was making it. Mm. So yeah, don't be me.
That is the classic podcast trap. Yeah. Sometimes our producer is like, oh, babe, that thing happened to you this week. Do you want to talk about it? And you're like, yeah I do. Yeah,
totally.
And then
the
microphone's the
content.
On, like, oh, God. No.
No, I love it.
Yeah, so like I explicitly wanted this show to be somewhere where everyone was guaranteed a happy ending. There wasn't going to be a horrific breakup. There wasn't going to be someone getting killed. Like, there isn't going to be cheating or abuse. Like, it's just like, anything bad that happens, happens from the outside, from external sources, and it's handled. You know, that was a big part of the power fantasy. It was like, what if we could stop homophobia?
Yes.
You know, like that was, I mean, it kind of, you know, I'm joking about it now, but it really was like the primary purpose of the show. And yeah, it was my fun little hobby project. I just wanted to learn about making podcasts. I started in 2016 because we do seasonal cycles. So it was like, yeah, I'm just going to make this little thing. It's just going to be some fun. And then it got way more successful than we expected. Like, we passed 500,000 downloads in April.
Wow. Like,
so
incredible.
Like, it's a bit more popular than I anticipated. I mean, fortunately, I have just fallen in love with podcasting and fiction podcasting specifically. We have two other shows as well. Nims Nebulous Notions, which is a little sci-fi thing, and Supernatural Sexuality with Dr. Seabrook, which is a fictional radio show where people, you remember those wonderful old daggy shows in the 90s where like people would call up to talk to a therapist about sex and stuff? Yes. So
that's
we did.
I wanted our show to be so.
So we did that, except it's in a world where monsters are real. So people call in about like their vampire boyfriend, and their werewolf girlfriend and stuff like that. And so, yeah, that's we're currently working on season two of that at the moment. That was also been really fun. But yeah, I don't know. I really love podcasting as this medium for queer storytelling because no one can stop me.
Yeah.
Right?
That's it. Like, you can't tell me no. I'm going to make this cool thing and give it to you.
Yeah. Like, you can't stop me. I'm going to do what I want. You know, like, I'm frustrated by COVID because my next project was going to be an all in-person thing. I wanted to make an all trans cyberpunk show, but COVID's ruined that for now. Yeah. So
there's going to be this explosion of queer creativity as soon as because we have to deal with the actual stress of a pandemic at the same time. I can't wait to see the projects that come out of the kind of frustrating isolation and lockdown of coronavirus, including an old trans like, that sounds incredible.
And that's the kind of thing you can never go to Spotify for, right? Like, you can't call up Spotify and be like, hello, Mr. Spotify, I would like some money, please. I'm going to make an all trans cyberpunk show. Spotify would just be like, that's not going to make us any money. So no. Yeah. You know?
Whereas, it's like when I emailed Spotify, I was like, last week our episode was real cool. We talked a little bit about really bad douching experiences we had. You'll really be liking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but yeah, because podcasting is like the kind of the most DIY publishing platform that exists at the moment. Like,
it's kind of punk a little bit.
It's extremely punk. Because, I mean, even something like video, we're kind of beholden to like the YouTube gods, right? Mm. You're like, yes, there's Vimeo, but like, you know, whereas like, podcasting, you just need an RSS and you're good. That's it. That's all you need. No one can stop you. And I think that's why, like, audio fiction in particular has a way higher percentage of queer characters than any other medium I've encountered, because no one can stop you.
Yeah.
You know? And I just think that's marvelous.
Well, Erin, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you this evening. Thank you so much for speaking to our audience about all of
this.
Thank
you so much for having me.
Of course. And how can our listeners find and follow your work?
So easiest way is just go to my website, erinkian.com. You can also at me on Twitter. I'm at erinkian. If you want to listen to our podcasts, you can find all those at ParsifalPez.com or loveandluckpodcast.com if that's the one you're most interested in. That's pretty much it.
Love it.
Amazing. Thank you so much for the chat. I don't think I've been informed and laughed as much in an interview before, you know.
Man, that's my brand. Just like
it
ranting.
It was like Whiplash, this interview. It was like, oh, yeah. And then fully screaming.
Yeah.
So thank you, Erin.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
Well, we are at the end of our fourth last episode.
Yeah. So weird.
So weird. So weird. Just before we go, I do want to plug. So we're talking about the side gigs. And hey, if we've only got four episodes left, I'm getting in a fucking plug. This Monday, so Monday the 3rd of August, is the fifth birthday of Granny Bingo, which I'm pretty fucking proud of because we've done that. It's been sold out every 5-year-old month grandma's. For 5 years. Yeah. So to celebrate, we decided to do the night, but instead of doing it at the pub, which we obviously can't do, we're doing it on Zoom.
You can grab a ticket. Pubs?
I know. The amazing Lisa Mann is our special guest.
Oh,
Lisa
amazing.
Mann, she's been paying people in the community's bills during lockdown, which is quite incredible. So she's going to come on and talk about that and do a little drag number for us. There's amazing prizes. There's going to be a couple of celebrities pop in as a surprise via Zoom.
Are we celebrities?
No. no, you even have to buy your own fucking ticket, man. But if anyone wants to go, jump onto Granny Bingo on Instagram or Facebook and you can find the links to grab a ticket. It's Monday the 3rd of August and anyone can play from anywhere in the world.
Amazing.
Oh, and don't forget, we have our after show with Dylan O'Hara talking about sex work in Victoria.
Yes.
Very interesting interview.
And the decriminalisation,
And also other projects, if you'd like to buy my debut fragrance, it's called Kick Them While They're Down, While They're Climbing About Town.
It's a very distinct punch, like a scent.
Is it the smell of peroxide?
It's okay. No, it's the smell of cigarettes, but after you've found a packet, you know, that's been slightly damp for a few weeks.
I know that smell very well.
So it's called Kick Them While They're Down, Clowning About Town. It's available at Chemist Warehouse exclusively as of next week or via my online store, which is called Punch Your Way to Success.
I love it. It'll be right next to the Gina Liano one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Love you, Gina. And stay tuned for our next three awesome episodes. But until then,
bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.